What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Evolve Your Brand podcast. I'm your host, Dave Gold. And on today's episode, my guest is Nick Aguirre, aka Nick Gnosis. He is the high performance hypnotist who is actually the founder of Apex Mind Coaching, an organization that helps elite performers reprogram their subconscious minds for success. Nick uses hypnosis and other modalities to help leaders and salespeople manage stress, break through limitations, and uphold consistent peak performance. It's people like Nick that I love to have on this show and really spotlight and highlight how they went from having a dream, having a vision, to evolving their brand, to being successful and living their purpose. So without further ado, thanks for jumping on today, Nick.
Absolutely. It's been a long time coming and really excited to be here.
Beautiful. So Nick, how about we start off with what made you interested and diving deep into the world of hypnosis? What was that like?
Yeah. So to be honest, Dave, I didn't know like a ton about hypnosis. And in my mind, I kind of grouped it with a lot of this like kind of either new agey stuff, or I thought of like, you know, psychics and kind of like, you know, pseudoscience-y things. I didn't regard it as being real substantial. And we kind of had a dismissive attitude towards it. And it literally changed in one day. So I used to be a professor and I taught communications, digital media, a whole bunch of other stuff. And I would travel sometimes. So I was going to a conference and this literally all just changed from one day to the next, where I saw a live hypnosis show. And if you've never seen it before, it's mind blowing. So it's very different than like hypnotherapy. A stage hypnotist's job is basically to entertain. So there's like this, it's basically a digital marketing slash social media convention. This is in Las Vegas, and these are mostly small business owners, and they're being called up to the stage and being hypnotized. And I'm just seeing like these people's behaviors and demeanor and everything just change rapidly. And it was extremely dramatic. It was like I got sucked into this portal of this new world where like in the morning, I didn't really think much of this thing or didn't know a whole lot about it. Then by the end, it completely blew my mind, blew the door open on what was possible. And you know, I couldn't sleep that night. I got instantly obsessed. Yeah, and the rest is history.
So what steps did you then take to become a hypnotist, and how is hypnosis and the work that you do with high performing individuals different from your average mindset coach?
Sure. So the first question was basically, how do you become a hypnotist or hypnotherapist? So it varies a lot, like from state to state, but in the US, it's not usually super hard. So in that you can do it as long as you're willing to put forth the work and the effort and the hours, as long as you, you know, carve out some time in your life to do it. So what was really cool about this was being a professor, I was a lecturer. So my job was a lot of just teaching all day long. So I'd teach, you know, a couple days a week, and then I'd have some grading, some curriculum. But other than that, I had quite a bit of time in the evening. So I was able to dedicate, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours a night to studying, to reading, to practicing. And, you know, when I started, I basically just practiced on any warm body I could find. And, you know, the word kind of started to get out. You know, I called my brother and he's like, hell no, you're not hypnotizing me. Right. Like people started, I started kind of getting that reputation a little bit, where I meet someone and they say, are you the hypnotist? And I'd be kind of confused and be like, oh yeah, yeah, I am. And so it's like creates this weird identity shift, right? And I know you work a lot in personal branding, so it's kind of like you see that, I'm sure, you're in your work, like when you change the way that a person calls themselves or how they present themselves, to change their behavior, their beliefs and all that. So it was kind of in this like in between state for a while of doing both of these things. And it basically started off as a hobbyist, just doing this for fun to kind of see if I could. And then I started getting approached more, and people say like, you know, hey, I heard you do this. Can you help me to quit smoking? Can you help me with, you know, this issue, that issue? And it just started to kind of sprawl out organically. So it was just a ton of practice, and fortunately having a job that allowed me to do both at the same time for quite a while. And where I naturally found the niche, so your next question was, how does this differ from like your average, you know, run-of-the-mill mindset coach? Well, I wanted to do some kind of transformational work or to be in personal development for quite a long time, but I didn't really have a solid vehicle to do that. And with hypnosis, you can create sometimes very, very rapid changes in behavior. So it's there's so many different tools and modalities. It depends on what you're trying to change. But I think of identity, behavior, belief system. And a lot of times when you have business owners, salespeople, entrepreneurs, the way that they self-identify their internally held beliefs manifest the behavior. So when they want to create a change in performance, whether that be more sales, more clients, different type of clients, charging more money, whatever is the case, they have to go within and change some of those things. And the way that hypnosis works, because most people are kind of, you know, wondering, is you've got a conscious mind and you've got a subconscious mind. And if I had to just explain this to people real simplistically, your subconscious mind is driving well over 90% of your behavior. And it has to be this way in order to keep us efficient. The problem is that it tends to keep us in these patterns. So we get stuck in an equilibrium where it's familiar, it's comfortable. And sometimes to break through that change can be really scary for people. When you're in hypnosis, you're so deeply relaxed that all the normal workings of your conscious mind, your critical mind, go into the background, and then you become hyper-suggestible, which is to say you become way more open to new ideas. Your imagination improves. You can visualize and internalize new realities that you might normally not have access to. This is how people can, you know, overcome lifelong fears and phobias, and sometimes just one or two sessions. Help people quit smoking in just one or two sessions, because they're trying to solve it with the wrong tool. So it's that 10% versus 90%. And the simple analogy that I use for people is, imagine that you're an actor. So imagine that you're an actor. You are the greatest actor of all time. You can do any role, comedy, romance, drama. And it's like you've been given this script, and 90% of you is just acting in accordance with the character that you believe you are. So with hypnosis, we get really in touch with, who do you think this person is, this character that you are, and then how is that being acted out? We take you into the trance over time, conditioning you to reach deeper and deeper states of relaxation faster and faster. And then we rewrite the script. So I would say to somebody, you're not only the actor, you're also the director, and you can now rewrite your self-concept. Because you cannot outperform your subconscious self-image or self-concept. You have to update that and rewrite that. And once you do that and you change your identity from, say, being you know, a person who's overweight to someone who's fit, or someone who's, I'm new in business, I just started, versus no, I'm a professional, I've been doing this, I'm seasoned, I'm experienced. You're rewriting, chiseling in that new identity. And that's where you start to create really rapid behavior change.
Interesting. So something that came to my mind as you were talking about the hypnosis is the correlation between relaxation and stress that we go through in our life. And sometimes when we're in a state of very high stress, that will lead us to finally put in the work to study for the test, or to go and leave that toxic environment or job or relationship or whatnot. And other times when we're in a state of relaxation, we can perform at a very high level because we don't feel so much tension. We can move smoothly and effortlessly. And sometimes the action that we take when we're feeling relaxed is very inspired. But different people work in different ways. And usually I feel like the amount of stress that you need in order to put your foot on the gas and press go has to do with your upbringing and how much stress you were going through as a child and how much trauma you're carrying around. And a lot of times that trauma that you're carrying around, it shows up in your business, in your relationships with your clients, with your boss, with your partner. And I'm wondering, do some people come to you and you see that their trauma is dictating their narrative? And if so, how do you handle that? How do you deal with that?
Sure. So a lot of good stuff in what you just said. One thing before I lose it is the piece about stress is not 100% bad. Like in general, not everyone wants like more stress. We generally want less. So that's why I say I don't necessarily want someone to eliminate stress, but more like manage. Because you're right, the sense of urgency of being like, enough is enough. I'm sick and tired of this. It's time for a change. Totally. So it's a question of, what kind of stress, how much stress, and being stressed about the things that actually matter. So I mm-hmm. that's a great point, and I don't want to lose that. What I got from your question, I'll kind of, rephrase, correct me if I misunderstand, is like when people come with their childhood, their trauma, that basically their baggage, does that filter into who they are? Does that show up in the work? And yeah, 100%, right? And, that's a lot of what got me into personal development was having to slay my own demons and having to, overcome my own challenges. So yeah, it's the stories of who people believe they are. And the things that were put on them by their environment, their parents, their teachers, their surroundings as a kid, and they're used to just acting out that role over and over. So 100% is sometimes you do have to go back in and deal with those things. I would say for the most part, I'm more future oriented, which is like, sometimes people will say, I had this thing and that I'm not ready to talk about it. I'm like, that's fine. We might not even have to talk about that. So a lot of the times I don't even know what happened with somebody because they don't usually have to bring that up. It's going to be a case by case, and it really depends on what we're trying to work on. Yeah.
This concept of shifting your identity and changing your narrative is so important, as you said, in branding as well, because innately in today's day and age, you are your personal brand. So when you put yourself out there online, naturally your values, your beliefs, your energy is going to attract a similar like-minded energy. And so if you don't change your energy and your beliefs and your systems and your values in order to attract the type of people that you want to attract, you're going to be in a constant loop of frustration, negativity, lack, scarcity. And we all naturally need to do this mindset work to move away from someone that we once were into someone that we want to become. And I'm wondering if you have an example of a way that you shifted your identity or someone that you used to be and how you changed and became the person that you are today.
Totally, 100%. So first thing would be like I really want to speak to the personal brand part, because a lot of the times there's such a value add there. It's kind of like your digital business card or like a lot of times we find people remotely and I might come off as being a nice guy or, a level-headed guy, if you were to just talk to me at Starbucks, but if you look at my website and it's not real put together, then that might not come across through a digital medium. So yeah, totally. It tends to like reflect in different ways. So that personal narrative comes out in all these different arenas. So it comes out in your language. It comes out in, how you dress, talk, act, present yourself, and even in your digital presence, right? So if I was to look through, old social media pictures, the further back I go, the more I'm just like, oh, why did I think that's, why did I not tell him to take that picture again? Or like, why was I wearing that?
Why is it still on your profile? Which is something that I really had to question a lot of my clients, is that something that you still want people to see when they go and look you up and find you? Is that going to inspire them to want to work with you? Or is that just a past self that you're holding on to?
Right. 100%. Yeah. And I, as someone who used to work with students, the thing I'd see is like they'd have the red solo cup in their pictures. And I'd just be like, dude, come on. It's like you're trying to get a job. No solo cup, please. So yeah, it all has to do with the identity. And you know, you're not gonna fool people for very long, because it's my belief that whoever you are deep within, that's gonna come out eventually, right? To give you the question of or answer of like, what have I done or what have I changed? I'd say one of the biggest ones I've done for myself and that I help clients to do is I used to say I'm introverted or I'm shy or something. I used to identify as, you know, someone who wasn't good with people, someone who did not speak up, someone who's, you know, introverted. And when you use that language on yourself, it's like you're kind of giving yourself hypnotizing as that. What happens when you change the language and, you know, say, I thrive in this environment and now I'm learning how to be in this environment too, or I'm acquiring public speaking skills. You know, I'm learning that. So when you change the way that you talk about it and see yourself, another example would be like with creatives, I'm sure we both have that creative background there. It's like when people say, you know, oh, I don't know how to draw, I'm not creative, or I don't, you know, come up with good ideas. They have to switch that language and switch that thinking and just start thinking of it more as a skill set.
Yeah. I mean, just to bounce off that, I had this identity that I was not creative and that I had no creative hobbies. And so it became a goal of mine to find something that would help me to artistically showcase myself to the world and connect with the world. And so I picked up a pretty cheap DSLR Canon camera and I started taking pictures on the boardwalk in Tel Aviv. And that made me connect with a lot of new people. It helped me to make some new guy friends, it helped me to meet some women. And it helped me to really start putting myself out there on Instagram. And that's what kind of led me to understanding the value of personal branding, just that desire to connect with my creative self, which I feel like we're given a pencil and a pen and some paint when we're growing up. And at a certain point, for a lot of us, that just gets suppressed. And yet it's in our creativity that we find innovation, that we find our unique capability to express ourselves authentically with the world. And that seems to be what's missing, because there's other hypnotists, there's other personal branding coaches, there's other energy coaches. But the reason why people go to Nick Gnosis or to Dave Gold is because they enjoy our creative self-expression.
100%. You've said something important in there too, which is like, my creative self. And another thing that I share with people is we have what's called parts integration, which is like we tend to think of ourselves as one person, but we have these different selves and these different voices. And so there might be this part of like my child self, inner child, the teenage self, me at work, my work persona, me doing hypnosis, me as a speaker, and finding these different selves and then starting to tweak them, having them interact, having them talk and negotiate with each other, resolve things, and then creating a new part. So it sounds like on that day, you just in that single moment, single decision where you said, I'm going to make this happen, it's like you created this new part of you that you were nurturing with these interactions and when you took photographs. So that's like that blossomed into a new identity that you presented.
Yeah, identity shift, an evolution from within, and you know, a healthy habit that I added to my life, something that you talk a lot about in your content, which was, you know, just doing something that would help me to connect and provide value to the world. Okay. And we all need to think of a way that we can connect and provide that value, because the more that you do that, the more you start to expand, you start to dive into gratitude, you start to see life in its perspective. and you start to attract like-minded people. You know, if I hadn't dove into photography and branding and you hadn't dove into hypnosis, we would never have met and crossed paths on this journey and then been able to inspire others. And that is really innately the beauty of building a brand and finding what is your unique selling point. What are your skills that you resonate with, the value you can provide to the world that's going to light you up, that's going to be a passion that's burning from within. And so, you know, just as we dovetail into habits, maybe you want to talk a little bit more about the effect that healthy habits have on your life and kind of the habits that you have implemented, whether they're body habits, schedule habits, or identity habits, as you talk about.
Yeah. Before I do that, you said something really, really important there. We said a couple things in there. One was like, yeah, you tend to attract whatever energy you put out, and that there's a thing of like, yeah, you could go to any hypnotherapist. There's a bazillion of them, but people for whatever reason are going to connect with something I said or with something about me. And what I'd say, like what I wish I knew sooner and what I'd want people to know, especially like young people are trying to kind of figure out who they are and what they're going to do. I thought about it always as like, you have to be the best at this in order to do it. And it's like, not necessarily. There's so many different ways to do it. And people connect sometimes, like you don't have to be a mega huge corporation business. You can thrive as a small business or as even just one person. You can have your own unique creative perspective. Sometimes it's the value systems that a person has in common, or sometimes it's a target audience. There's a million different ways to specialize. And I think a lot of people don't give themselves credit for like how their unique path in their journey gives them a window or an insight that no one else has. So I wanted to unpack that before diving into the habits. On the habits, yeah, people get stuck in a few different places. And I feel like the habits are the behavioral manifestation of who you believe you are. So you are what you're doing repeatedly, right? The smoking example was, I like that one because it's very visible, right? This person, they smoke cigarettes, they're doing it compulsively, their car smells, their clothes smells, right? That it's across the board. So when you change the identity, you change the habit. And I'd say one thing like for me would be the schedule. So yeah, it's forcing myself to do things that I absolutely don't want to do, forcing myself to do things when I don't feel like doing it, and finding a system to kind of reward myself has been helpful. I'd say the big thing here is the metric. So I use hypnosis. I'm known as a hypnotist, but one of the other things I do with the clients that again is a differentiator is that I have metrics and tracking. So when I intake someone, I'm going to be asking them certain questions. Do you get up and go to bed at about the same time of day? Do you know exactly what you're going to be working on tomorrow? Do you have quantifiable outcomes for those tasks that you're setting? Do you challenge yourself to do things even when you don't feel like doing it? Are you a man of your word or a person who keeps their word to yourself? So those are some of the things that we actually measure, and they come up with a score. And then we check it again after a week, 2 weeks to see what's changed in this person. So I'd say for everyone, whatever it is that you're trying to work on, if you don't have some kind of like criteria for it, some kind of like, if what's the success evaluation? How do you know when you've done this correctly? The moment that you start measuring it, you start improving it. Another example would be like, if I want to cut back on my expenses, how much money I'm spending, the very first step is to just like track that and actually record how much. And then I did this last year because I moved to Austin where everything is very expensive. And I'm just like, I'm spending $600 a month on Uber Eats. Like we need to do something about that. And the moment that you track it, it becomes more real. Your mind sees it and says, whoa, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to cook some stuff, or we're going to go to the grocery store. So habits always attach some kind of metric or some kind of outcome that you can measure. Because otherwise, how do you know that you're moving closer towards that goal?
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some habits and body schedule identity habits that you have been implementing in order to step into a higher performance in your business?
So I think about basically with my scheduling, it used to be something like, it used to sound more like I'm going to get up sometime around probably 8 or 9, and then I'm going to work on my website, and then maybe I'll go for a walk after that. Now, if a client says that to me, I'm just like, what are you talking about? It's like, no, you're not going to get up at around 8 or 9. You pick a time. So now it's like, okay, I'm setting my alarm for 6:30. My morning routine is from 6:30 to 7:30. From 7:30 to 9:30, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for my website. I'm going to swap out picture. I'm going to update this copy, change it to that. Just way more detailed and specific, so that I'm not BSing myself, so that I have something to keep accountable and I'm writing this down. This is another big game changer for me, was like, if you don't manage your time, you don't manage your life, right? So this is why the schedule is God to me. And a thing that I've been doing that I was forced to do by one of my business coaches is to write it on paper. And initially I kind of pushed back on him and I was like, you know, dude, it's like, I have Google Calendar, like I can do it here. You want me to write it out like a first grader on pen and paper? And he's like, yes, write it down, handwritten. I'm like, why? Just do it. So I did. And then it does something when you handwrite it. It pounds it into your subconscious because you're doing this very fine motor movement that's very deliberate. And by writing it in pen with ink, there's a sense of finality, like setting it in stone. So getting a hold of like moving from being employed to being, self-employed, I got to be my own boss and I got to know when to kind of crack the whip on myself. And having the handwritten schedule has probably been the single biggest tool to keep myself accountable.
Handwritten schedule. I like that one. Yeah, I'm just using a Google Calendar, but that thing saves my life for pretty much everything. And for the people that don't use a calendar, I don't know how they do it, especially when you get into running a business, building a brand. You need to stay organized. And, you know, the body habits as well of getting into the gym, eating healthy, and the identity habits of stepping into abundance mindset, of realizing that you don't need to look at other people as competition. You can collaborate like the way that we're doing. You can always find more clientele who are willing to value and pay you what you're worth if you value yourself and you pay others what they're worth and you put that energy out in the world. So, you know, whatever you give is what you're going to get. Now, with that being said, waking up at 6:30 in the morning for some people, or going to the gym, or even just doing meditation or visualization or affirmations, is very painful. And it can really hurt. And it can really be difficult to create that habit. Some people say it takes 14 days, 21 days. Some people say it takes even longer to create that habit. But during that time that you're trying to shift your identity and change your habits, that you do go through this period of reluctance and your body pushes back. And something that I saw in one of your posts, which was, and I'll just read it word for word, pain is your friend. Pain teaches. Pain reveals growth. Pain guides attention. What did pain teach you? And so I have to ask, what did pain teach you about shifting your identity and developing these habits and becoming the high performance hypnotist, yeah. Sorry.
pain is, I'm not saying, to be clear, I'm not saying I like pain and I'm looking to be like trying to hurt myself, nothing like that. What it means is you're gonna have stuff in your life that sucks.
What happened?
Yeah, 100%. So the biggest one for me was just, it was my depression. And I don't use that word anymore because we're talking about identity and language.
Uh-huh.
So that was a big shift for me was, you know, I tried all kinds of different things of like, you know, counseling, therapy, and it kind of helped, but it's like, what it does is I reached a point kind of where it's like, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. Like other people are living their lives. You know, I kind of reached a point in my 20s where I was like, nobody owes me anything. No one's coming to save my ass. Like I got to be a man and take care of this thing myself. And when I kind of hit a point, it was like both, it was like a low point and a high point where it was like the pain was so great of not wanting to, you know, continue feeling crappy from day to day where it's like, I'll do whatever it takes. And, you know, so I do things like I learned to meditate and to just even get my mind to shut up for 2 seconds was impossible. So to get a 10-minute meditation was like to sit still. I did that. I did CrossFit and, you know, I was in horrendous, you know, not overweight, but just like not active. I was sedentary, you know, just at the computer all day. So to go from being sat at the computer for 20 hours at a time to going like doing metabolic conditioning and weightlifting and stuff, it would have been impossible if I didn't reach like that pain point. So getting into personal development and also, you know, being challenged and being called like in my work, as a professor, I mean, at the time, like that it was now not only just my problem, but that becomes other people's problem that when I bring negativity and when I'm down, that's going to affect students, that's going to affect other faculty. So it was more like, it's like the world needs you to be different. The world needs you to change for the better. And so it was a combination of like my own hitting that threshold and also the environment needing me to change. One of the biggest things was to just stop using that word of depression and to, you know, just say like, no, I'm done with that. I'm moving past that.
Was there a word that you switched out instead of that word?
I think like part of the language change was like overcoming depression or like it is because when you say I am depressed, it's like, I even just uttering that out of my mouth now, it's like, I don't want to do that. Changing the language to put it more past tense, like, you know, I used to have that or I overcame that, right? That's a big one. Yeah. Yeah.
Or I used to be down and now I'm much stronger and better because of it. And I've been right through those periods as well, even a few months ago. And, you know, something that I talk a lot about is environment, because as a digital nomad, I travel a lot. And sometimes the environment that I get into is a beautiful one. Like today I'm looking out at the ocean and I've got palm trees in front of me and beautiful beaches and very teal blue water. And it is inspiring. It is living the life. And there's beautiful people down here and I'm making all these connections. But just a few months ago, I was freezing cold in my home and I was not feeling, you know, at that peak state. And if I wanted to identify with the depression, anxiety, or whatnot, it held me back. And the minute that I said, okay, I'm ready to let go of this attachment to this feeling, okay, it was the minute that I could relinquish control, surrender, and then start to move on. And the same thing happened for me at other points in my life. When I had to go through that pain of rejection in developing better communication or social dynamics, or going through lots of jobs after getting out of the army. And there was a lot of pain as well in the army, carrying around heavy equipment and not eating the kind of foods that I wanted to be eating. Okay. And staying up late and doing tasks like guard duties and stuff like that, you know, and that pain, it really helped me to become a more balanced person, a more loving person, and a more grateful person. And because of it, I was able to get to a place where other people were looking to me for advice and for help. And, you know, I was able to give them perspective based off of what I had learned. And I'm sure you are the same. And I'm wondering what kind of people are resonating with your message in your hypnotherapy coaching, And, you know, what kind of work do you do with them? What kind of process do you take them through?
Totally. So right now it's about 50-50 between like entrepreneurs, business owners, and employees, and they have different challenges. And a lot of them tend to be leaders in either case. So obviously, if you're an entrepreneur, you're a leader by default. But in companies, a lot of times when people move up, there's like a thing of you tend to think, oh, you know, my boss has it easier, or like everyone wants to be a manager, everyone wants to be the leader. Not always. Sometimes people get put in that position where, you know, they grow and they're like, I just want to be a computer scientist. I just want to code. I don't want to lead people. But then the organization calls them to do that, or that now, you know, this person's leaving and you move up, and there's things like imposter syndrome, feeling like, oh, you know, I was able to do this job well, but now that I've been promoted, like it's scary. I'm going to have to work harder. People are expecting more. When people switch industries, like they've been in industry going to academia or vice versa, or they've been in, you know, XYZ industry moving to ABC. There's all these identity shifts of like, maybe I'm an outsider. I don't belong here. Am I good enough? So helping people sort through those stories and, you know, get them in touch with who they need to be. So can you see yourself as an executive? Can you see yourself as SVP of sales? Can you see yourself as a dynamic public speaker rather than someone who doesn't like it? It's creating the behavior by changing the identity.
So really reframing the identity shift and stepping into that new version of yourself by visualizing that future self.
That's a really big part of it, is visualization. And in fact, if there was one thing I'd want people to take of like, how can you do some of this? How can you practice self-hypnosis? Is the more you practice it, the quicker you're able to concentrate. And there's a part of your brain that can't really tell the difference between what's actually happening and what you vividly imagine. And many people spend the bulk of their day kind of visualizing negative things. Like, what if this happens? What if that happens? Like this, my boss is going to yell at me. What if you instead visualize best possible outcome or saw things going really well? And this is a tool that we would call mental rehearsal. Especially in hypnosis, it amplifies it, because you're so deeply entranced that all the normal noise of the conscious mind has kind of scattered into the background, and your concentration is so powerful that you can just create this new reality in the instant. So taking the time to think, what is my desired outcome? So outcome, know your outcome. And then what does that look like? What do you see? What do you hear? What do you feel? So for you, it would be like, well, if I wanted to be a digital nomad, then I'd think, well, I want to see a teal, a teal ocean and palm trees and, you know, have the boardwalk nearby or whatever's the case. So you gave some really good sensory inputs there. If you can attach a sensory input, you know, I keep visualizing myself in the Times Square Sheraton in New York and thinking, what do I hear? What do I say? And I remember there's a Dunkin' Donuts right across the street. And I think of the turkey sausage bagel or whatever from Dunkin' Donuts. I'm seeing myself in a gray suit with a white, shirt, eating the turkey bagel. And I can smell the coffee and hear the people, like super visual, super detailed. It's going to happen. I'm going to be there and I'm going to speak at something. It's so real, so vivid that it cannot happen. And anybody can do that if they're dedicated to spending the time visualizing.
Beautiful. Well, Nick, with that being said, if someone really resonated with your approach and your message and what you've been through, and they want to learn more about your coaching, what's the best place for them to reach out to you?
The best place to get a hold of me is my website. So that's apexmindcoaching.com, apexmindcoaching.com. You can also find me on Facebook, Nick Gnosis. Just be mindful of the spelling, NICNOSIS. And even if somebody is skeptical, like, I'm not so sure about this hypnosis thing. Look, I get it. I was the same way. Come have a chat. Come talk to me. I would love to meet new people, whether they're interested in the work or they just kind of want to chat. Always happy to meet.
finally, Nick, do you have any plans for evolving your brand in 2022? And if so, what are they?
That's a great question. And I would say it's this, the shift from B2C to B2B. And I found this by accident, which is that I was kind of going after individuals and as more of a personal development offer. And then I found people were using this for professional development. They'd say, I've got a technical panel coming up. I've got a speech, I've got a sales team I need to train, I've got this, that. And then they started having like, you know, oh, my corporation will pay for part of your training. So I'm kind of just seeing a natural pull in that direction. So I've been asking myself questions of like, how do I market this more towards like, you know, organizations? Cause it has been more individual. And then also branding myself more as a speaker as well. So yeah, I consider myself a hypnotist, and that's been the thing I put forth with the brand, but also wanting to be known as a speaker as well. Yeah.
Beautiful. Guys, if you enjoyed this episode, like, comment, share with a friend. That's the only cost. You know where to find me, David S. Goldstein, on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Instagram. And go follow Nick as well and reach out to him. He's a great guy doing amazing things in the world. And it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast today. Talk soon.
Thanks, brother. Thank you. Yeah.